See You Now is a podcast highlighting the innovative and human-centered solutions that nurses are coming up with to solve for today's most challenging healthcare problems. Created in collaboration with Johnson & Johnson and the American Nurses Association.
Nurses are present at the beginning of life, at the end of life, at the bedside, and in homes and communities, in prisons, schools, hospitals, birthing centers, faith-based centers, telehealth and mobile clinics, in natural and human-made disasters, amid armed conflict, in flight, in transport, on the ground. Nursing is everywhere, in the midst of human joy, concern, and suffering, bringing comfort, compassion, expertise, and skill. Nursing brings to the world a uniquely intimate knowledge of the human condition and its interactions with the environment, and is well positioned to address the social, economic, political, and institutional causes that inhibit health and well-being. Nursing works to undermine those social and political forces that harm and strengthen those forces that foster health and flourishing and repair and heal the world.
Nurse ethicist Kara Curry, reading Interpretive Statement 10.5 from the new Code of Ethics for Nurses. Welcome to See You Now. I'm Liz Stokes. I'm a nurse, attorney, ethicist, and the director of the Center for Ethics and Human Rights at the American Nurses Association. And I am excited to guest host this episode of See You Now, Ethics in Motion, because for the last 5 years, I have been working with a team of 48 expert nurse leaders and ethicists from across the country to synthesize the voices of nurses from around the world, ensuring the new Code of Ethics reflects the diverse realities of modern nursing practice as we reimagine and release the 2025 Code of Ethics for Nurses. The Code of Ethics for Nurses is revised every 10 years, and that timing matters. It forces us as a profession to pause, to reflect, and ask, who are we now? What does nursing require of us in this moment? For years, we had been collecting observations, places where the language felt dated, where new realities in our profession were not fully reflected, where nurses were asking for clear guidance in rapidly evolving spaces. But what none of us could have predicted was just how precise the timing of this release would be. We are living through a true revolution. Technological, social, political, and professional. The pace of change is not gradual, it's exponential. And when social infrastructure shifts this quickly, it affects healthcare, it affects nurses, and ultimately, it affects the people we care for. We know the Code of Ethics for Nurses is foundational for nursing education. It is used as a guide for advocating for justice, human rights, and dignity in care. And it is a cornerstone for shaping our professional values and identity. But this revision of the code was not simply about updating language. It speaks to how nursing remains grounded when everything else feels like it's moving. In this episode, I speak with a nurse ethicist, my colleague, at the American Nurses Association, and one of the panelists for the revision, Kara Curry. We talk about the process of writing the revision and the importance of this moment. We'll then hear from three nurses who have woven ethical practice so deeply into who they are that it shows up in the smallest moments and the largest decisions.
So, Kara, let's dig in. Imagine gathering the perspectives of 49 diverse nurses who are bringing representation from all of their constituents and coming to a place of agreement for what our shared values are as a profession of millions. It was extremely challenging and extremely extraordinary. First, one of the questions I often hear is confusion about how to even use the code of ethics in practice. So, how do you see nurses maybe misunderstanding the code and how to use it? And what do you say? How do you explain what it really is?
Yeah, so I think oftentimes people view the code of ethics as a code of conduct. And in some professions, that may be the case, but in our nursing profession, that is not so. So the code of ethics is not a code of conduct. And so I think it's important to recognize that first. It doesn't function as a regulatory checklist, it doesn't police individual behavior. But what it does do is reflect who we are as a profession. It articulates our collective moral commitments, and it looks at nursing through a social ethics lens and not merely a practice-based lens. And so most nurses, I would say, are familiar with the framework of bioethics and how those notable principles of autonomy, beneficence, non-maleficence, and justice are used in the clinical setting to weigh competing values, or they are used to serve as guidance in how we might come to a decision regarding an ethical challenge or dilemma. And this is an extremely helpful and valuable model, but nursing ethics and the code specifically does something different.
And Kara, we really see that so much on social media, especially lately with this revision. We see how nurses are talking about this at different conferences, talking about this globally. I had a nurse colleague send me a message to say, I just used this code of ethics in a meeting where I did not feel brave. I was not feeling brave about speaking up, but this was a body that was going to take away language in a policy related to social justice for thousands of nurses, tens of thousands of nurses. And this nurse messaged me and said, if it wasn't for seeing you at a conference talking about the code and me getting the code and citing the code in this meeting, I would not have felt brave enough to speak up. And she said, and I kept speaking up. And she said, and I talked for over 25 minutes and said, do you know what this code of ethics says? Let me read it to you. And she was able to persuade that body to keep the language in the policy. Again, a policy affecting tens of thousands of nurses. So when I hear stories like that, or when I see the code being used in practice at organizational levels in nursing leadership, it again just demonstrates what it means to A, be in a profession. We are a profession of nurses. There are many other professions, and I think it's helpful for nurses that are entering our profession to understand what it means to be in a profession. It's not just I work at National Hospital. It's you are a nurse. You are part of a self-regulating body, and these are the expectations and values that we prescribe as a profession, but it's also how the public knows what to expect when they interact with us as well.
And then I would mention another example, particularly in Provision 5, where in the previous code in 2015, it talked about nurses having the same duty to themselves as they do their patient, not just self-care, which is not bad. Self-care is good, but it goes beyond just self-care and into well-being. How are we doing? How am I functioning? How am I showing up in the world? And how is that being reflected in my life, not only when I show up to work, but when I go home? And I think that the concept of flourishing, which is located in Provision 5, that was also something new. Who would think that somebody would put that in their code of ethics? Well, nurses did. Because we do want to make sure that we're able to flourish and different things contribute to that. Not only our careers and the care that we provide our patients, But the things that we do that go beyond that. So I think that's an important section that was integral to include in this revision.
It was critical for us to think about what is happening right now in our practice and what we needed to address in the code, because the code is really set to last for another 10 years. So we had to be future focused about what are the potential technologies or what are the potential places that nurses could be practicing in, and then determine what are those potential ethical issues that might arise. And so yes, we have AI now, but will there be another advanced technology? And so part of that challenge, I would say, is making sure we're broad enough that we're talking about advanced technologies, because oftentimes the ethics don't change. The technologies change, but the ethics and the foundation of how we make sure that things are just and that they're accessible and that they're being used in a responsible and ethical manner, those foundational pieces don't change. And we articulated that in the code. Of course, we talked about artificial intelligence because that is what is happening right now. But again, really leaning on what are some other areas, such as precision health. And another really important topic was conflicts of commitment. This is new in this revision. There's all of these things in our healthcare setting that may become a barrier between the nurse and the patient or the nurse and the patient family. How do we address that, and how do we make sure that those issues are addressed ethically? And that became our conflicts of commitment section. So we still have conflicts of interest, but we also added conflicts of commitment to really address those maybe future forward things that we don't know that are going to happen now, but we can be able to address in 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And there's one concept in the code that we intentionally included twice. It's in two different provisions, and it really calls out the acknowledgement that nurses operate in places where they are best equipped. And there's not an expectation that we are asking nurses to save the world. Sometimes, if you read the provisions that are the nurses' relationship to society, it feels very large. There are issues around environmental justice and climate change, racism. There's really large issues that for many nurses feel untenable. Like, there's no way I'm going to be able to address this or solve this. And we acknowledge that. And we actually heard this. We included this because we heard this in public comment. So we put our draft document out to the world and said, give us your feedback. And we heard from a lot of nurses that said that, like, there's no way I can tackle climate change. I'm not equipped to do that. And so we felt that it was really important to acknowledge that and include that this is not an expectation. This is our aspiration. This is really what we want our profession to look like. And for those nurses who are out there, because there are nurses that are tackling these really large societal issues, we wanted to give that guidance and ethical foundation of how those nurses can operate and move forward in those spaces.
You're listening to See You Now, Ethics in Motion. I'm your host, Liz Stokes, nurse ethicist at the American Nurses Association. The code is structured around relationships. We've talked about the nurse's relationship to patients and families, the nurse's relationship to self, and the nurse's relationship to society. But there's another relationship that sits at the heart of nursing practice, the relationship nurses have with one another. Provision 6 addresses this directly. It says that nurses, through individual and collective effort, establish, maintain, and improve the ethical environment of the work setting that affects nursing care and the well-being of nurses. This is not abstract language. This is about the culture you walk into when you start your shift. It's about whether you feel supported when you're struggling. It's about whether moral distress gets acknowledged or ignored. It's about whether someone speaks up when something feels wrong. Kelly Laser is a nurse leader who recently transitioned from 13 and a half years at the bedside to a leadership role on her unit. She spent her career thinking deeply about what it means to create a moral community, to build trust in rooms where trust is hard to come by, and to help newer nurses find the language for what their instincts are already telling them. Her story shows us what it looks like when nurses intentionally create environments where people can flourish, where ethical practice is not just expected, but supported, and how the code is a living framework for how we show up for one another.
My name is Kelly Laser. I am a nurse leader, a fresh nurse leader. I've been a bedside nurse for the last 13 and a half years, and I recently took over as nurse leader on my unit just a couple months ago. When we talk about the code, it's important to talk about our careers in a like full picture, because I think that the code gives us so much grounding in our practice, even when we might not know it. We might not know that what we're doing is the code, but that's exactly what it is. And it gives us purpose to like what we're doing. When people ask like, what is your job? What do you do? The words in the code are exactly what we do and why we do it. And so I think that nurses across the world are practicing the code in everyday shifts. And I don't think that we quite identify that until you actually read it. And you're like, wow, this is exactly what I do. I have been a nurse for a long time, and I really didn't find the world of ethics or even the code for a solid 10 years into my career. And I didn't know what I was missing. I think that I knew what I wanted to do. Like I knew every day what I wanted to practice, but I was missing the piece of the puzzle that made sense to what I was trying to do. So I was being myself in rooms and making sure I'm listening to patients and making sure I'm caring for families. But it wasn't until I entered this world of ethics that I truly put the code into practice. And so, you know, I had one patient say to me, I need to go home. And he really didn't speak to why. But because of all of the work that I have done in the ethics world, I explored the why. So asking patients what they need and why they need it, and truly taking a moment to listen to what they're doing and what they're needing is so important, because we have no idea what is happening in somebody's life. And for us, it's just a regular Tuesday. We're coming into our shift. We're just going about our day. But to somebody else, this is such a drastic change from their reality. And it's such a stark difference from what they were experiencing before they became a patient. And I think that we often forget that life exists for them outside of these rooms, outside of the gown. And it's important to see the patient for their full self and identify how we can better help their situation. What is pretty cool to watch on my unit is the gap that's being bridged by senior staff to newer staff. We host a mentorship retreat, and it's just an all-day hangout time. But it's reflective of what is the culture of our unit? Where are the gaps in your knowledge that you want to ask in a very safe space? How do we provide this inclusive community on our unit so that the patients feel it? I mean, one of the patients said, I feel like you guys are a family. And I think that at times, like, we are, because we're able to operate so well together because we've done it for so long that if you get, you know, four of us in a room, we can probably operate without even speaking to each other at this point. The patients can tell that we prioritize their entire well-being just as much as their blood pressure or their heart rhythm. So it's been cool to see the transition from being staff to being leader of something as special as this group. because they really take care of each other. Nurses are placed very uniquely when we're talking about patient care, because we are at the core of every story. And the way our stories intertwine over days or weeks or even months in this healthcare system changes the trajectory of patient care. I think that it changes outcomes. The nurse's role is paramount to the patient experience. It is up to us to really be present in those rooms for our patients so that we can establish trust in a very genuine way, so that both our nurses and our patients can truly flourish. The relational ethics that the code talks about is so important, because everything that we do, every shift, is ethics. It's important to talk about ethics in the beginning of your practice so that you're grounded in something so much bigger than ourselves. In provision 6, there is a mention of creating an environment of inclusiveness and belonging. And I love the word harmony, because I think that the world of healthcare is so hard. And I think that over time, everybody can attest that you ask the question to yourself, when you have felt broken in this career, why do I continue? Why do I still show up to work? Why am I choosing to do this? And having that sense of community when you come into work makes all the difference. So creating that for each other is so important, because the work is really hard. And so having support from each other is just so important. People might be sick of how often I talk about ethics, but I think that it's important for everybody, because it transforms the way that you participate in this world as both a nurse and a human. I really want to create a safe space for a group of people that are so important to this world.
Nurse leader Kelly Lazer's story reminds us that ethics is not reserved for the big moments. It lives in the everyday. It lives in how we greet a patient, and whether we pause to truly listen, and how we support a colleague who's struggling, and in the culture we build together on our own units. The small intentional choices that shape the moral environment of our work. Nurses go where the gaps are widest, where the systems have failed, where people have been left behind. They go to the streets, to the state capitol, to the spaces where health and justice intersect in ways that are impossible to ignore. For nurse Talia Neves, this has meant a career that has taken her into pediatric psychiatry, trauma, orthopedics, street medicine, occupational health, and policy advocacy. She cares for patients who cycle in and out of hospitals. She stands in front of legislative committees to testify about workplace violence. And she builds programs to ensure safety and support for everyone she cares for.
I'm Talia Neves. I am super passionate about health promotion, patient advocacy, and safety, as well as ethics. I have a diverse clinical background, and it's allowed me to touch upon every single aspect to the differences in healthcare. I think ultimately the ethics code comes down to doing the right thing when it's really hard, and understanding that even though it's hard, it's because you're actually making a difference. I was exposed to a lot of ethical challenges and dilemmas in my career. And the biggest question I always asked was, how do I prevent my patients from coming back to me as a nurse? It's not that I don't want to see you again, but it's asking the questions of, what is the trajectory of your wellness and your well-being? I am such an advocate for health promotion, health literacy, and health education, and really looking at things in a human aspect. But I think also, when you do the right thing, and even though it's hard, it really opens an opportunity to have those really difficult conversations. In regards to my street medicine experience, I left the clinical bedside because I wanted to understand where my patients were before they came to me, but also how they were within the clinical aspect of the being admitted to a hospital. And so moving from working in a facility to then going out on the streets, it allowed me to put that story together. It allowed me to understand the gaps and the barriers in where healthcare within this nation is going and where it is, whether that be health literacy, access, health insurance barriers, mental health, addiction, substance use. One of the biggest barriers is transportation. If you don't have money or if you don't have an ID, how are you supposed to then buy a ticket to get on a bus to go pick up your prescriptions? If you don't speak the English language or you don't understand how to read a prescription or what blood pressure means, how are you supposed to follow up? There are so many more barriers, I think, than people realize to those who are on the streets. There is a lot of ethical challenges that come up, especially around substance use. Other examples are family in a tent. That ethical question of there is a mother, she is working, she is providing food in that tent, diapers, et cetera. But do I call the police? Do I call protective services? Because there's a mom in a tent, she's got a roof over her children's heads, but at the same time, it's really hard to understand what that picture looks like. When you strip away that piece of humanity, that ability to trust the American healthcare system and that ability to go and ask for help really diminishes. And I got to see patients in their most vulnerable moments where they are at zero. There's nothing in the tank. And to have that support, to be boots on the ground, to really set that example of what it means to trust a health professional or to look at healthcare differently, that was a huge part of my work in street medicine. And it really just opened my eyes and changed the way that I look at very vulnerable populations. And after street medicine, I decided that these patients, they need a stronger voice. They need a voice that really understands their story and is willing to hold their hand during those really difficult time periods. Everybody has a story. And at the end of the day, it's really understanding that story and having a lot of compassion and empathy. And that's in the code of ethics, specifically provision 3. One of the biggest things that I'm working on now is ensuring that when a patient is discharged and they are homeless or are undocumented or whatever the background might be, that they are protected 100% when they're discharged. Right now, patients are not allowed to be discharged without a specific home base or a shelter. However, there's gaps in that, and I saw that. So I created a program at a 800-bed facility. And when a patient comes in, specifically when they're homeless, right then and there, they have an advocate who specializes in street medicine and homelessness, gets them what they need, basic necessities, a tent, food, a bus pass, whatever they need. And then they have their clinical team, they have their psychiatric substance use team, and each person has a specialization. But being the advocate for specifically homelessness or undocumentation, et cetera, that really moves people to where they need to be. And within 2 weeks of implementing that program, we were able to take 11 people off the streets. 8 out of those 11 ended up actually finding permanent housing, which is incredible. I really think it comes down to my love for making communities safer and being a part of that community. I believe that in order to be a successful individual that's going to contribute to a community, you have to understand each other. Somebody once told me the most important thing you can do is make people better when you leave. And so for me, it's instilling that piece of responsibility, accountability, compassion, empathy, but really allowing people to take reign of really their healthcare. Because if you don't take care of yourself, how are you supposed to be a productive person in your community and ultimately your society? And that is a huge part of the ethics code, is how do we make an impact on our communities globally, internationally, in our local communities? They're going to be different. Every patient population is different. Every patient population is going to need something different. That's really what drives me, is making my community safer for all.
Talia's work embodies Provisions 3 and 9. Provision 3 calls nurses to establish trusting relationships and advocate for the rights, health, and safety of those in our care. Provision 9 asks us to work towards practices, policies, and legislation that promote social justice, eliminate health inequities, and facilitate human flourishing. Talia's story shows us what it looks like when a nurse sees a problem and refuses to look away. When advocacy becomes not just a value, but a practice. When the code becomes a shield and a compass in the work of making the world more just. Nursing's ethical obligations do not stop at our borders. Provision 10 is new to this revision of the code. It acknowledges that nursing, through organizations and associations, participates in the global nursing and health community to promote human and environmental health, well-being, and flourishing. This provision asks us to approach global health work with humility, to recognize the power dynamics at play, to listen more than we speak, and to build sustainable relationships rather than one-time interventions. Shika Kalavor is a nurse ethicist who was part of our revision panel. She talks about the importance of everyday ethics and illustrates how nurses build relationships that are sustained over time, and demonstrates the importance of learning, listening, partnering, and including everyone.
My name is Shika Kalavor, and I am a nurse ethicist. The concept of everyday ethics is essentially how we uphold our values in what we would consider the mundane. So when you do your safety checks at the beginning of a shift, that is an everyday ethics action. It shows that you value the safety of your patient. When we are giving shift report and narratives pass on from shift to shift to shift, asking yourself, am I making assumptions without evidence? That is an everyday ethics action. And so everyday ethics as a concept, it's so powerful because it considers everything that we do as nurses as having ethical implications, whether we think it's mundane, whether we're titrating pain medication, considering big ethical concepts like the doctrine of double effect, or, you know, all of those things, even if we're not thinking of them as this big dilemma, they still matter and they all have ethical implications. Even how we allocate our time, allocation of scarce resources, including time, and you as a nurse, is under the ethics umbrella. And when we're deciding which patient is going to get this med first, who am I going to see next, those are all micro ethical or everyday ethics decisions that you make and that are constant, and they all have ethical implications. And so using everyday ethics in your toolbox as a way to uphold the values in the code is so essential to what we see as good nursing practice. And because I've read it so many times, I've memorized this line that says, a good society is one that treats everyone with respect and dignity, balances justice and compassion, and regards humanity without hierarchy. And anytime I am doing a lecture or a speaking event, I tell folks, if you're going to remember one thing from what I say today, even if it's not about the code of ethics, I tell them to hold on to that line, humanity without hierarchy. And I am so, so proud that Provision 10 has been added to our code of ethics, which really digs into this nurse to global community relationships. And that provision is so important to me, not only because I am a first generation American and I kind of live between two different worlds, but because the impact that Western countries have on the global context. And I think it's important to recognize the impacts that it makes when we go to those less resourced countries and how to comport ourselves when we do that. And I remember when I was in nursing school, I actually got the opportunity to go on one of these international trips, which are typically pretty common. And I felt so excited to learn and grow. And just by coincidence, it ended up being in Ghana, which is where my family came from. And before the trip, they had given us some light counseling on this savior concept and how to go and how to behave. But in my mindset, I was a Ghanaian and I was raised in America. We were going to Ghana. I felt almost exempt from this. I'm like, these are my people. When I got my clinic assignment, it ended up being the same clinic that my grandma walked 2 miles in labor to give birth to my aunt. So when I tell you about deep, deep ties, they're very deep. I remember one day we were just meeting with patients and an older man came in and he saw my name and he saw my last name and asked a few questions. And he's like, I was friends with your grandfather. And this was a grandfather I have never met. So this was a really deep, deep tie. And so I felt kind of exempt from these problematic dynamics that can come up when you have folks from privileged countries coming in to help those without the same access to resources. But once I started to think and ask more questions, I recognized that despite me being a Ghanaian, it didn't exclude me from the power dynamics that were at play because I was coming in as an American. Mm-hmm. We looked very good, but I started to question, were we doing any good? And I thought about the price of my plane ticket and the needs of the clinic. I was like, wow, the price of my ticket could have bought alcohol swabs, microscope slides, cotton pads, things like that. And I really, really started to question. And so I had a lifetime of preparation for a trip like this, but I still needed to embody a lens of humility and an approach that prioritizes the wishes of people who are affected. And now that we have Provision 10, it has this beautiful language about going with humility on these trips, going and preparing yourself in advance to cross language and cultural barriers, and language about providing respectful and compassionate care, and that no one is exempt despite preparation upon preparation, and to recognize that the past influences the present, and those dynamics are always at play. As we speak on this recording, I'm actually in Ghana and we have a trip planned to the clinic. And because of those micro moments that were inspired by my deep reading of Provision 10, I made sure I packed an extra bag with some stuff for the clinic. And although it may only help for a short time, it's still that sustained relationship that started when I went on this initial trip more than 10 years ago. And so wish me luck, because next week I'm going to go really hold that sustainable relationship, which I was reminded by this close reading of Provision 10 and my work on the panel. And it's just been a great process. And I've learned so much about myself and also how I continue to make those small moments be profound and have meaning.
Shika reminds us that ethics is not just about the big decisions. It's woven through everything we do. It's in the questions we ask. It's in whether we notice what others might overlook. It's in whether we return, whether we sustain relationships, whether we remain humble, even when we think we understand. You're listening to See You Now, Ethics in Motion. I'm your host, Liz Stokes, joined by my colleague and friend at the American Nurses Association, nurse ethicist Kara Curry.
So Kara, we have spent, I guess it's a number of years now, working on the revision of this code. And it is now public. It's now published. The public sees it. Nurses see it. Our patients see it. What does this revision of the code mean to you?
Well, the code itself, and I say this because of how entrenched I've been in the work, and then to be able to reflect upon my career and see the alignment of who I am as a nurse, but particularly how I moved in the practice setting, it really validates who I am as a nurse, caring for the individuals that I've cared for. And to be able to have a document like this, I don't know that words can actually do it justice because I encounter so many nurses who, even after this revision, have come up to us, Liz, and have thanked us along with the entire revision panel because there's so many people that worked on this because they felt seen and they felt proud that this represents their profession. So to have something be able to speak to who you actually are as a nurse, how you move, and it articulates that even when you can't, or when you didn't know how, and the times and the situations and the challenges that you faced, it's like, okay, this sees me. And that's powerful at a time when people are so burned out. When you have something be able to speak to how you actually want to be, how you want your profession to be, and how you want the world to see your profession, it really is a beautiful thing.
Kara, I absolutely agree. And as you mentioned, it was by design. We wanted to make sure that we didn't have an ethics book written by a bunch of ethicists because we know sometimes the ethics language itself is quite challenging. So we really wanted direct care nurses. We wanted nurses across practice settings. We had nurses who were working in the military, we had nurses who were working in ambulatory care. Nurses who were working with individuals who were living on the street. So just a myriad of practice settings. And Kara, I think about our process of getting here, and if they weren't blood, sweat, and tears, I would say they were laughs, sweat, and tears. We had many, many laughs together, but we had tears. We had some really difficult conversations. It's ethics. It's not black and white. It's not one or the other. It's not this option or that option. It's our profession. It's lives. It's patients. It's families. It's the world. It's society. And many of these topics were so heavy. And we're all bringing our own lived experiences and our vulnerabilities together to work through the exemplary of what nursing should be. And that was quite challenging at times. And to come out with a document that every single revision panel member is proud of was incredible. It was remarkable. It gives me immense pride that we were able to offer this and come together collectively, to demonstrate what nursing is, not only to our profession, but most importantly, to our patients.
Timeline, we've been working on this for years. And so a lot of what we're experiencing, while injustices happen all of the time, right? And have been historically, the way and the impact that we're all feeling it globally is, I think we can all agree and acknowledge that it's different now. But the fact that we've been working on this prior to this space and time where we're in, anticipating, not knowing. And then again, this speaks to the how we have to look at things and be forward thinking because this represent should be representing the next 10 years of our profession. But for it to come out at a time when it did, and literally be able to hit on and speak to everything that is happening in our world, it continues to blow my mind, as the next thing comes and we can cite the code on justifying a direction, where we should go, how we should respond, what are our values as a profession as relates to X, Y, or Z. Everything fits, everything that we encounter as a profession, I don't care where you are situated. It fits in one of those relationships. And so, if you know that that is the structure of your code as a profession, it shapes your values. You're very clear on what those are, and you're clear on how to seek that guidance when you need it.
If I were to reflect on what the public should expect from nurses and how the public can really digest this code of ethics. I actually think about our interpretive statement 9.3, which talks about the vision. So this is about the nursing vision of a good and healthy society, and really understanding that yes, you're interacting with nurses often on a one-on-one basis, but again, to emphasize that nurses are everywhere in so many different spaces, and the presence of nursing is, and the power of nursing is really striving for what that healthy and just society looks like. And we talked about human flourishing and what it means to be flourishing on an individual level. But the code also talks about how do we foster societal flourishing? Because we want our world to be better. We want people's health to be better. We want their wellness to be better. And how do we do that, especially in a time where we're often so divided? And we talk about the facilitation of civic engagement. So when I think about what this code means to society, it's the understanding that your maybe one-on-one interaction of nursing is so important and critical for you, and also the recognition that nurses are also doing so much on such a greater level to make the world better, to make the world healthier for you on that individual level, but then also you on the larger scale of the whole world and that global aspect that we talked about in our new provision in Provision 10, because that is what upholds our trust. So it's really helping nurses to understand their value, not just in their nurse-to-patient interaction and direct care, but what their value is to society.
For those who carry on this work, I really hope that they examine the process by which we shared and collaborated in this effort, because that is a personification of the code as well. And the voices that come after us, the younger ones, it's going to look different. It's going to sound different. And we have to be able to include that. But we also have to be able to include and respect the foundation, because the foundation is truly solid. And we bring in new voices. Diverse voices. And when I say diverse, I mean we show up everywhere. Those voices need to be at the table when bringing this work forward. So that is my hope, that that continues. And I think if that continues, then this will live forever.
Special thanks to our guests for this episode. Nurse ethicist Kara Curry and nurses Kelly Laser, Talia Neves, and Shika Kalavor. Thank you for sharing your stories and for the work you do every day to put the code into practice. In writing this revision, something became very clear to me. The code of ethics for nurses is not just about what happens in a single encounter. It's about the moral architecture of nursing itself. It's about creating the world we want to see. This is embodied in Interpretive Statement 9.3, the one that Shika quoted. It's about a good society, one that treats everyone with respect and dignity, balances justice and compassion, and regards humanity without hierarchy. Nurses show up for patients, for one another, for themselves, for the profession, for society, and for the world every day. And this code is a compass for navigation. When we understand the code this way, as a map of relationships, it stops feeling like a document on a shelf. It becomes a living framework for how we practice, lead, advocate, and transform systems. To read the revised Code of Ethics for Nurses online, or to purchase a copy of the code in book form, go to codeofethics.ana.org. For See You Now, I'm Liz Stokes. Thanks for listening.
Nurses are transforming healthcare through innovation, compassion, and leadership. And Johnson & Johnson is proud to continue its 125-year commitment to champion nurses through recognition, skill building, leadership development, and more. The American Nurses Association is dedicated to building a culture of innovation. Nurses improve the lives of patients and communities through innovative thinking, empathetic connection, scientific rigor, and sheer determination. ANA is proud to support and advocate for our nation's most valuable healthcare resource, our nurses. For more information on See You Now, visit seeyounowpodcast.com and listen to any of the earlier episodes in our library, wherever you get podcasts.